heard the vodka trade?
Yeah.
I'm coming around on the idea of it, man. I really am. Because the Raptors need a four, but they also need like a 4 or 5. And one of the biggest problems with Cleveland is when they play that LeBron at the 4 or 5, or whatever you want to describe it as, or like Love is at the 5, or they have Channing Frye at the 5. Where they basically have no true center. Like, Serge Ibaka is really, like, really a player that would help with something like that. Against a lineup like that.
I think spacing-wise, he's, like, beyond optimal, too, right? He can actually play with JV, which is something that they've desperately needed, if they're going to keep JV.
Yeah, exactly.
Which it looks like they are, you know?
Yeah, they're committed to JV, man. I don't think they're going to let him go in the near future. Unless there's some sort of, like, unspeakable trade. Somebody who comes up to them and says, how about I just give you like 3 first-round picks and like our budding superstar player for JV? And then they would be like, yeah, absolutely, I'd make that trade.
Well, let's trade him for Charles Oakley.
The Raptors need some muscle on that team, man.
Bring back Oak. I can't believe what happened last night. I know we'll get back into Ibaka a little more serious here, but that was nuts.
How much of it have you seen? Did you see the person that had it like on Twitter? I forgot the guy's name, unfortunately. But
I've watched probably too much of it, to be honest.
There was like the broadcast, right? The broadcast version, and then like you can't even watch it on League Pass anymore. So you have to on League Pass they kind of like on the home feed. There's like some sort of expose going on during that exact time, and then if you're going into the away feed, they don't show like a camera angle for it, and then if you go to the ESPN feed, they simply from that it's like 6:18 in the first quarter, they like you could see it noticeably skip, like it. You see him, like, dribbling the ball to shoot the free throw. He shoots the free throw, and then you can see Porzingis, like, looking around, and then it, like, skips to him shooting the second free throw.
And we all know why. Without getting into it too much, like, what are your thoughts in a kind of, I guess, in a vacuum on it?
Man, it's just another feather in the cap of this disorganized Knicks franchise.
I don't think he's wrong, though. I think all the things he said about James Dolan are something... It's kind of things that a lot of people have been saying, and he's just upset. I mean, look who was right next to him trying to calm him down. Phil Jackson, who, by the way, give Phil Jackson credit for spotting this. They always say there's one sucker in the room. Mm-hmm. Give Phil Jackson credit for spotting that sucker, and that was James Dolan, and getting paid millions per season to sit there and do what exactly? Throw shade at Melo on Twitter about how he's a leopard?
Man, the job Phil Jackson has gotten, he's just like James Dolan basically said to him, dude, come be the GM, and he's like, nah. He's like, how about this much? And you know, in those movies where they write like a number on a slip, right?
Yeah, like, that's what I feel like have to do. He opens it up. He's like,
he said to them, no, you give it to them, and they look at it. And they're like, no, this is not enough. And then you know, you write like a number and give it back to the person, and then they look at it, and then they write another number and give it back to you, and it's like, you try to play it off all cool, like. You shake you nod your head, and you're like, yeah. You give it to him, and then as soon as you exit the room, you're just like laughing because you can't believe they offered you so much money. That's where Phil Jackson is right now. He's just like, I can't turn away all the money, man. It just doesn't make any sense, and he's just, you know, just flying by the seat of his pants. The only reason why he's still there is because he hired Porzingis, or he drafted Porzingis,
which was highly criticized at the time too. Remember?
Yeah, exactly. Remember the crying. Well, remember the crying Knicks fan.
Yeah, the crying Knicks fan. They're actually insane. But in terms of like leverage, I guess in the sense of negotiating a deal, to kind of segue back to Serge Ibaka, if the market's cool on him, do the Raptors not kind of hold a similar? We'll use the word leverage against the Magic here, where they can, you know, kind of dictate what kind of offer the Magic will receive.
Absolutely, dude. The Magic are going nowhere fast, and that's been going on for the past, like, 3 years. So you could basically say...
Oh, you want me to read what Mark Spears put up?
No. But the Raptors could say... No, I was fixing my mic. Sorry.
No worries, because Mark Spears was very vague in what he said.
Go ahead, man.
Man, he just said, Toronto has had its eye on landing a power forward like Orlando Serge Ibaka before the trade deadline, a source said. So no shit, that's not really news. That's something that we've known since, what, Chris Bosh left? I mean, in the summer, the Raptors tried to pursue Ibaka in a trade until they realized that the Thunder's asking price was pretty insane.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Think about what they wanted. They wanted, what, Norm Powell, Corey Joseph, Patrick Patterson, and a first?
Yeah, get that's a no-go, man.
Yeah. And now look at, like, Orlando went all in, and they're on the verge of basically trying to get anything in return for Ibaka now.
Yeah, so, they traded, what, Oladipo, a first, and something else? Like, I think it was, like...
They traded something else, too. I'm trying to remember.
I can't even
It was pretty now. Much Oladipo in the first, though. It was, like, yeah. the main... It was, like, the crux of the deal.
Right, and now he's not really producing for the team. And it's not... It's partially his fault, but if the team is bad, right, like, you can't really expect a role player to play well on a bad team. So... With the Raptors, I guess their negotiation tactic would be, well, he's, you know, he's not playing so well over there, and you guys gave up all these, you know, they're not going to bring up how many picks they traded away. They're going to be like, you guys aren't really doing anything right now. So,
and yeah, they don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, like, you guys aren't really doing anything, and he's going to be a free agent soon, so we could just give you stuff. You admit defeat, we give you stuff, and you get the free stuff. We get Serge Ibaka. It's not like you guys are going to be good anytime soon. This is going to actually help you guys tank and be worse so you can get a better draft pick.
Well, here's the beauty of acquiring Ibaka, too, is that he's only making $12.25 million this year, right? So based on the way salaries have to match up, the Raptors only have to offer roughly around $8 million in change to make sure that, you know, the trade can go through. So there's the first part of that that makes it easy.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, Ibaka, they'll get his bird rights, too, which is huge because when you look at who they got coming up in free agency, they got Lowry, Patterson, and presumably if they acquire Ibaka, Ibaka. Likely they'll only be able to keep two of those three guys because of financial reasons unless they decide to pay the luxury tax, right. Which that's a whole other like thing to get into. But in the grand scheme of things, Ibaka is very easy to obtain in a sense where the cost isn't that high right, financially.
So, yeah, exactly. So what are you thinking for that trade?
Well, I'm kind of on the same page as you where it's like, you know, Orlando, you're not going anywhere. Do you want something or do you want to just lose him for nothing? So I'm thinking you would either go – either Terrence Ross or Corey Joseph, either Poeltl or Siakam, and then one of the firsts. I think really? That would be I wouldn't even realistic. Trade them.
They would have to, honestly, at the negotiation table, they'd have to fight me for one of the first picks, man. You know,
holy crow.
Yeah, they would have to fight me for it. Like, you know, like you go to your car salesman, you're trying to get, like, lowball them, and then they're trying to like get the price high, but you lowball them because you're trying to get that middle ground. So they'll be like, you know, Ross... And, like, you could choose Poeltl or Siakam and give you the choice, and that's it. And they're going to be like, what? And I'm like, yeah, that's it. And they're going to be like, no first-round pick. I'd be like, protected first-round pick.
Yeah, they're both protected, but damn, dude. I get the vibe that you're literally doing what, you know, you said Phil Jackson did with James Dolan. Nah. Put a little more. Where you're just, like, hanging up on the Magic, being like, okay, let's call him back. Let's see if they'll take it this time. You still don't want it, K-Bye.
Yeah,
you keep hanging up on them until they get so frustrated. Like, don't hang up on me again. I'll take the trade. Like, done.
Exactly. But you just have to realize you have to make the trade from the position of strength, man. And by offering up so much, even though that'll probably be the trade, just by, you know, presenting that as the first thing, first scenario, I don't know. I'm not down for that. I'd like to play hardball in my trades, man.
See, I agree with that. I think besides Jerry does that. But don't you think Hennigan, the Magic GM, might kind of fall victim to, hey, I traded this much for him. I want to recoup some value now. Although that doesn't make sense in terms of, like, you know, we're talking right now. Mm-hmm. I think humans just fall victim to that, where he wants to recoup some of the value that he traded away so the trade doesn't look that bad.
I mean, to save face, yeah. So he doesn't get fired, yeah. And so he would definitely be looking to do that.
So what if I threw in a couple of names here as, like, potential kickers that they could throw in with Ibaka from the Raptors' perspective? Because one-for-one would make sense. Like, they could just go Ross for Ibaka, you know? Mm-hmm. That would work. But
that would give them a wing that can shoot. Somebody that can actually shoot on the Magic. A little right? bit of creation. Oh, my goodness.
Holy crow. I mean, somebody who can handle the ball.
Terrence Ross is basically what they want Mario Hezonja to be.
Right, are they going to give up on him? Because he's one of the guys I had written down here as a possible kicker, if they give up on him.
Yeah, they get the Raptors would take him in the trade, but his
swag's unreal. His swag is off the charts.
Exactly. But he's like, he rarely plays. Like, he's basically a rookie.
I don't know. It's weird.
And Terrence Ross is basically, Terrence Ross does the same thing they want Hezonja to do. We're giving you the guy that actually does it. You can give us the prospect.
Well, what about like taking a back a guard? Like the other two names I have written down here are C.J. Watson or Jody Meeks. Not flashy, but both like perimeter guys, ball handlers.
Meeks, you know? Yeah, even Watson. Watson would make sense just because if you trade Kojo, then you want Watson back, and I guess if you trade Ross, then you would want, you know, either Meeks or. Meeks is pretty good. You either want Meeks or Hazonia. That's if you want to go young or if you want to do now stuff. I guess you would want to do now stuff.
So I get the vibe, though. Ultimately, you would prefer to just acquire Ibaka.
Yeah, I don't really... There's nothing really... You know, it's just like a corpse of a team. It's just give me Ibaka and that's it. You can scurry away. Go away.
So all things considered, financially, cost to acquire him, you know, the fact that the offseason would get really complicated because they'll have all the bird rights and who can they sign or is going to luxury tax make sense? Like all of that.
They're going into the tax, man. Like if they're
well, they have to, right?
If they want Lowry, if Lowry doesn't turn into dust after all the minutes he plays today or in the next
couple
weeks.
We'll get into that
in a second. If he doesn't turn into dust in the next few minutes, yeah, they're going to re-sign him, and then they're going into the luxury tax. So Patrick Patterson is going to be up for a contract renegotiation. I think that's something that's really low-key. Nobody's really talking about it because Patrick Patterson is like a low-end or mid-end power forward, you know, so... He definitely has value. Like Patrick Patterson is not a worthless player. Like he would definitely be a starter on other teams.
100%. But I mean, his injuries have definitely maybe lowered his value a little bit. Not a lot, but slightly. Because think about it. If he's playing right now and he's balling out of his mind, the Raptors are going shit. Well, it's good for us because we're winning games. But the other side of it is we got to pay this guy now.
Dollar bill. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so does Ibaka move the needle enough to maybe not beat the Cavs, but at least guarantee a spot back in the Eastern Conference Finals?
Yeah, I mean, he even gives a better chance against the Cavs just against that lineup I was telling you about. Plus, he's a shot blocker. The team doesn't have any shot blockers right now.
Nope.
And a decent rebounder. You know, the team also needs rebounding. Shoots the mid-range, shoots the three. You know, he's good, man. He's good.
He can pop, all that.
Exactly.
I'm a big fan of Ibaka. I know his rebound rates, block rates. Like, there's a lot of metrics you could point to that say, hey, his game is down. But I just feel like playing on a shit team like Orlando, dude, come on. Like, showing up to the court every day, yeah, you get paid millions, yeah, you're professional, but human nature, you're just like, oh boy, here we go.
Yeah,
another game of the Magic. We're coming to Toronto where you're fighting for the Eastern Conference, you know. The culture here is fully immersed in basketball at the moment, for Raptors fans at least, and it's just a different energy. Like, you're going to feel rejuvenated as a player here.
Yeah, just think about in your real life, anybody who's listening to this, is like, if you go to your job and it's like your coworkers are incompetent and your management is like playing favorites and incompetent, and you're just like, man, I hate going to work so bad. You're looking for a new job, right?
In the NBA, that's Ibaka.
Right? In the NBA, you can't really look for a new job. You can demand a trade, but that's about it. So I have a feeling if he was going on to a team that has some sort of winning going on, in any capacity, if they had winning going on, he would be playing much better. He would have, like, a defined role.
No arguments here. All right. Yeah. On to Kyle Lowry's minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, mm-hmm. Second most minutes in the league played.
Right.
Number one in games of 40 minutes or more this season. Can this keep up? I know they only have three games over the next 15 days, so, you know, he's going to get a bit of rest here. DeMar DeRozan's back, so that cuts into his workload and his usage a little bit too, but are the Raptors running the risk here of, you know, overworking Kyle Lowry?
Man, he is so lucky to have not been injured at all so far. Like, he hasn't, like, tweaked an ankle or, like, jammed a finger or anything like that, because he's maxing out on these minutes, and, like, the more minutes you play, the more likely you are to get injured. That's just, like, the scientific fact, you know, and the more games that you play, the more likely you are to get injured. The older you are, the more likely you are to get injured. And he's just starting to, like, you know, it's starting to build up. All of those factors are starting to build up, and this is probably going to be a breaking point if he doesn't get some sort of minutes reduction. Luckily, the All-Star game is coming up soon. You get a few weeks off, or a week off, basically.
Well, have you seen people on Twitter that are like, you know, he shouldn't play in the All-Star game because it's going to add to his workload. Dude, I don't think a three-point competition and maybe 6 to 8 minutes of burn in an All-Star game that's pretty much a glorified walkthrough where you shoot a bunch of triples is going to add to his workload.
Yeah, that's nothing, man. It's like he's not going to the gym or anything. He's just like, shoot. Yeah, you just like show up, shoot, and then you play in the All-Star game, which is basically just like glorified pickup. and that's it. You can go home.
You'll see more effort from guys at your local YMCA this weekend.
Yeah, exactly. People are trying 100%. To prove themselves. People are trying to prove themselves at the Y, man. Not so much in the All-Star game. Unless it's like the last 2 minutes.
So going forward with the Raptors, then, how do they manage Lowry's minutes? Is there any solution to this, or they're just going to keep kind of treading this fine line where they're not overworking him, but they're getting pretty damn close?
They got to pray people get healthy. Like, anybody who gets injured just adds more minutes to him. It's because, like, you need your best player on the floor, and if you have less, the others aren't as good, and they're not around, and it's just like, God, Lowry, I need you to play more, man. We're going to fall behind. And it's like, we're down five. We're down, we're down 10 when we're usually down five, or we're down one when we're usually up five, so I just need you to play more. So Patrick Patterson comes back. DeMar DeRozan's already back. I have a feeling there's just going to be, like, one of the trainers going to talk to Dwayne Casey, and say, this guy, he's been playing too much, and it's a miracle that he hasn't gotten injured. He should probably bring down the minutes. I know that we're trying to get, like, a high seed, but the seed doesn't really matter if Kyle Lowry's injured.
Well, the Raptors are big, too, on using, like, all the sports science things where they're very, like, in tune with biomechanics and measuring a player's steps and his heart rate and all of his health, like, anything correlated with his body, they measure during practice and games and off days. So I think they have a pretty good idea of what's going on with Lowry, but still, like, all these minutes, dude.
And he always gets – and the way his play style, like, he's always getting bumped, and, like, he's always sitting on the ground and –
jumping, like, on the stands, yeah, loose balls. It's just,
yeah. Like, it's seriously a miracle that he hasn't been injured yet. We hope he doesn't get injured, but it's like, you know, they're dancing on the fine line right now, man.
The finest of lines. One solution I think might be possible, although Dwayne Casey seems to use this guy like his closer now in baseball, where he only comes in for the ninth inning. That'd be Norm Powell, who seems to only come in for the fourth quarter now. You alluded to it a bit earlier where you said, you know, Damari Carroll, you mentioned him, mm-hmm. and how the Raptors get behind so early that they kind of get dependent on Kyle Lowry. Mm-hmm. What if they inserted Norm Powell into the starting lineup, maybe perhaps build some more leads and leaned on Powell a bit more and shifted Carroll to the bench? Is that something they might do, or is Norm Powell destined to be this ninth inning closer?
Man, I don't...
It's weird, right? I don't get it.
Here's the thing, like, he's good enough to be a starting shooting guard on pretty much any other team. But they already have a shooting guard that is better than him on the Raptors. And then they have Terrence Ross. Terrence Ross somehow has more equity than Powell, even though Powell seems to be a better, like, defensive player, and he's almost the same offensively. So they're just, I guess, yeah. Basically, you're right. What they're using him as is the closer, right? So he has his energy. He has, like, his max energy when everybody else is, you know, at their 75, 80%. And he's able to stick out more. I don't know if he's going to excel in that role, because it's hard to just come cold off
the bench. How does that make sense, though, man?
It's hard to come cold off the bench and then just play, like, 12 minutes in the fourth. But we'll see, man. It's, again, Dwayne Casey's an unorthodox coach, even though everybody thinks he's an orthodox coach. He's very unorthodox. I feel like this could be maybe a breakthrough in Norman Powell's play. And his contributions to the team, but I'm observing it. I haven't judged it either way yet.
I don't know. I mean, he is unorthodox this season, and he started to get that way a little bit last season. But before that, you're spot on. He was so conventional, at times predictable, at times frustrating, that you knew it was going to happen. And now we get this whole, you know, change that we're like,
yeah, he's like Dwayne, playing. He's like playing going on? Two centers now, and he's playing people that can't shoot, and he's playing super small, and he's playing super big. He's all over the place this year.
So maybe we'll see some more, I guess, continuity as the playoffs approach. And I think Norm Powell shifting into the starting role would provide that continuity. Or something you talked about last podcast, you brought up, was Wilson Chandler. Maybe they go out and get a guy like that, since he's not happy in Denver.
That'd be an excellent trade. See, the thing is, if they make a trade for either Ibaka or Chandler, they're not going to be able to get the other unless they trade both Corey Joseph and
Terrence Ross,
right? And then that's a huge overhaul, because then you're relying on DeLon Wright to come back, and if he doesn't come back in time, then, you know, Kyle Lowry's going to be playing a ton of minutes, unless you want Van Vliet to play, or you'll have
no... They love Van Vliet right now. Does it not look that way?
Yeah, they love him. Dwayne Casey loves him, and I feel like the announcers love him too, just because of how small he is. But I don't know.
Well, I think him and Delon Wright are very mature because they stayed the full years of college. They're overagers in that sense. They're in their early to mid-20s, so they're a bit more mature. They both play defense. They're hardworking guys. You know, they fit that cliche of, like, you'd love to hate – you love to have these players on your team, but you hate to play against them. I think they just fit that whole narrative.
Yeah, exactly. And Van Vliet is just – he's just – he hasn't played that much in the NBA, which I'm skeptical of. Same with Delon Wright, he's – he hasn't had significant, like, a lot of minutes at backup point guard. So it just makes me a little bit worried when everybody has to, like, scale up in a role, especially when they plan to go deep in the playoffs. Like, that can be bad. That can end poorly. Not everybody's like Norman Powell.
Well, Corey Joseph, you know, that's another guy, too, that Norman Powell could easily take his minutes in the second unit. I'm having a really hard time coming to terms with, like, how they're not using Norman Powell.
Would you rather see them play Norman Powell or Corey Joseph as, like, backup? I guess it's not backup. I guess it would be like a combo guard type of scenario.
Yeah, because Lowry's mostly playing with the reserves, right? So he's your number one de facto ball handler. Mm-hmm. So why could they use Powell? Because the number one thing that's really killing Corey Joseph this year, yeah, you can look at his offensive numbers. It's his defense. He's fallen off a cliff. He used to be an okay perimeter defender. This year he's been horrific. He's bottom 10 in everything. I mean, just look at his defensive real plus minus. It's, dude, he's like bottom 7 with point guards.
Right.
I just don't know where he's fallen off this much, and that's been the real issue with him. Whereas Norm Powell is actually a decent defender.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's been killing the Raptors.
What I'm thinking of is, it could still be done now I'm thinking about it, because there's – Corey Joseph is never – it's never just him and the bench, right? It'll be him and Lowry, or it'll be him and DeRozan. And when it's him and DeRozan, DeRozan is typically the primary ball handler. So if you just substitute Powell into that role, there shouldn't be that much of a drop-off, because his defense is better than Corey Joseph. And he's a secondary or maybe tertiary ball handler, and you can afford that on a bench lineup, so –
Well, when do we see Delon Wright get a chance to play?
When he comes back? Is he back? I don't even think he's back yet. He's still nobody. There's nobody has said anything. I think he's playing in the D League right now.
Well, he's on the bus squad. He'll play games in the 905 and then go back up to the Raptors and sit on the bench. Where they'll play. I thought for sure he was going to get in that Brooklyn game.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then they just gave all the minutes to Van Vliet and DMP'd Corey Joseph for the first time in his career.
That is wild, man.
That's, dude, like, and the worst part is what Casey said after the game. How he says, you know, this is a game for him to mentally get right, which made it seem like there's more issues going on. So Casey kind of cleaned that up after the next day of practice. But, you know, it makes you really wonder what's going on with Corey Joseph. If this is not just something that it might not be physical, but if it's mental, that's even worse.
I think it would be used. You think you would be used to it by playing with the Spurs, because Coach Pop is notorious for playing somebody for like 30 minutes one game, and then you don't play for the next 4 or 5 games, and then you play 15, 20, 15, 20, and then 3. So hopefully he's prepared for unstable minutes. But yeah, it just doesn't, I don't know. I really have to like articulate my thoughts on Corey Joseph, man, because it's taken a wild turn for him, because he looked so dependable last year. Is just his shot creation last year. He wasn't able to really shoot the three, but his defense and his just able to be just like a reliable, you know, he was almost like Kirk Heinrich in the way he played. Like, he was just steady dude, reliable. He was one of my favorite players on the Raptors.
See, I've tried to articulate my thoughts around him too, and I become more perplexed. I'm just like, how the hell did we get to this point?
And it's not like an aging issue, and his game has never really been reliant on athleticism in any sort of way. It's just he's worse this year. He's just been playing worse. He's been in the same role.
And he was like all cheery, and he's like, you know, working hard. He was at the Murray Carroll's camp. He was what it sounded like, all the right things to make sure he's going to have another good season, you know, just to improve upon what was a breakout year last year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been the complete opposite.
Yeah, maybe last year maybe it could have been the aberration in what is his actual play style. But, yeah, I don't know. Norman Powell has been making strides, man. I could see him stealing minutes And, like, the more we talk about it, the more I'm thinking, yeah, you know, we could just play Norman Powell instead of Corey Joseph. And, you know, that Kojo trade starts to look a little bit more appetizing.
Right. Well, Norman Powell should play more minutes. And if they don't, I'm still convinced looking at it. This is something you hammered on a few weeks ago, that it's his height. That's all it is.
Yeah,
that's the only thing holding Norm Powell back, because Dwayne Casey wants to play more small ball. But when you have a 6'5 guy that's going out there and you can't really deploy him at the three, because, you know, if teams start counteracting that with big lanky forwards, Norm Powell's just at a disadvantage. So
yeah,
we've seen guys like Paul George and LeBron and whatnot just rip them. I know those are gifted athletes, but the point is those long, lanky 3-4 players give Norm Powell trouble.
And that's part of the reason why he is being used as what we're calling, like, the closer in that fourth quarter lineup, where everybody goes small in the fourth, right? So if everybody's going small, then I can sneak this guy in, right? And it'll still work out, because everybody's playing perimeter players, and he's a perimeter defender. He's not really guarding anybody in the post. So if you're going to go, you know, when people go to their bench, they're not necessarily going to a lineup that is punishing small guards. I think they'll be able to get away with something like that. That's something they have to experiment with, and you gotta really, like, see it on the floor. You can't really do that in practice.
Yeah, I just think that's something they gotta do more too, but at the same time, I think they gotta really figure out what they're gonna do with Damari Carroll. Is he somebody that they want to shift to the second unit? It's pretty clear now. Love you, Damari, but you're not the perimeter defender that they thought you were gonna be. He's just, whether it be age, body breaking down, health, whatever it is, he's just not that guy. So they got to determine if he's still capable of playing in the starting lineup, which I don't think he is. But do they transition him into a reserve role now, where he comes off the bench, still plays his 20-25 minutes?
There's no way. No, like, who are you playing in his absence? Like, the starter minutes, like, he's playing, what, 28 minutes a game now?
Yeah, I think they would put Norm Powell up in that starting minutes. And I think the second unit would just become Lowry, Corey Joseph, Terrence Ross, Carroll, and then you could say Patrick Patterson as, like, a reserve. Because let's face it, the rotation is going to shorten as the playoffs get closer. So I think that's something in a long-term outlook would make sense.
Hold on a second. He's playing 26 minutes a game right now, which are, you know, that's like high-end bench player lineup or a bench player minutes. But too many teams start with, like, a big guard or a big forward at the three, and you can't play Powell against them. The LeBron Jameses and the Carmelo Anthonys and the people of the sort of, you know, the Kevin Durants of that kind, you just can't play Powell against them. He's just not tall enough, and he doesn't weigh enough to contain them. So that's the only reason why I think Carroll would be playing the three over him. Like, the three, Damari Carroll is not as good of a defender. It's just, like, his length is enough. It makes up for his lack of, like, actual lack of skill as a defender. You know, he has the physical attributes to compensate for it.
That makes sense. There's no arguments against that, to be honest. I mean, what are you going to say? Physically, he is what he is. He's not going to grow. Yeah. So
it's a shame, man.
Yeah, it is.
Norman Powell, if you're 6'7", you'd be the greatest.
Well, what if
you'd be so good for this team at 6'7", man?
He would be, but what if you shifted DeRozan on one of those guys? Is that even an option? I mean, I don't think so, but...
Nah, I don't think so. You know, DeMar DeRozan is like 6'6", 6'7", probably 6'7" in shoes, but I don't trust his defense. I'm still skeptical of the defense, and he's not shown me any flashes of, like, yeah, I'm a better defender this year. So I'm not buying it. I'm not buying him on any threes either. Sorry.
All right. Circle the wagons. This leads us back to the only solution then. A trade.
So, I guess
the problem with the trade is, like, who else is there aside from Ibaka, Chandler, or Millsap?
We got to make that. Maybe they made that trade for Chandler, man. I like the trade for Chandler. I like the trade for Chandler or Ibaka. And if it's only going to cost you, like, Ross and, like, Pirtle or Siakam, just make the trade. If it's going to be, like, a first rounder, then you're going to hem and haw, but then you're going to be like, yeah, you know.
Yeah, you might as well at that point. I mean, the issue, too, is, like, is there anybody cheaper? Like, do you think the Knicks would part ways with Courtney Lee, who they signed this offseason? I don't think so.
No, I don't think so. And plus, he's a guard. Move too many guards. Yeah. Too many guards.
I'm trying to think of who else could play the wing for them. It's so agonizing because you look and you look and you look and you're like, I don't know.
So you look at, you can look so many times and just be like, you know, it'll be the same list of players every time, and just, you'll revisit it like every week or so, and just be like, man, isn't there a guy? And then you're just like, no, there isn't.
You know who would kind of be ideal, but he doesn't want to leave the West Coast because his kids obviously live in LA, is Matt Barnes.
Oh, that's pretty interesting.
He's getting old. He's already flat out said, man, he's not leaving the West.
Oh yeah, because he lives in Cali, he's a Californian kid. I think he was born in Los Angeles, but he's played on the Lakers, and then he played on the Clippers, and then, I think he played in the Warriors, and now he's playing in Sacramento. So he's just like, I'm just gonna stay in California.
He's actually a football legend in the state of California. He was just a beast, a receiver, and you know, obviously he's got to protect his kids from Derek Fisher, dude. You know, he's always taking social snipes on social media, but I busted his ass and whatnot. So
he's
got to stay in the West for that.
Derek Fisher. What a guy, man. What a guy. Oh, my goodness.
Did you hear him? He's like, I have no regrets about snitching, pretty much.
Derek Fisher,
the way things unfolded with the Knicks. Just shut up. Savage. Just shut up. Just stop talking.
Oh, my God. Oh, man, Derek Fisher. Man, the Knicks. Never forget, man. The Knicks. What was it? Just, you know.
That's the super team.
We're nearing the end of the podcast, but let's talk about the Knicks for a little bit here. Just because
we're at the end, but yeah, I love talking about the Knicks because I love seeing them in turmoil. I love it.
Right now, it's like actually, like, you know, pertinent to what's happening in the league. Where, what the hell is happening right now, bro? Because like the Charles Oakley thing is just like a feather. I think I said this at the top of the pod. It's like a feather in the cap. Like, there's so many. Like, with Phil Jackson, when he's taking constant snipes at Carmelo, and then, you know, James Dolan, like, I've just learned about this today, but it seems to be this ongoing thing where James Dolan and, like, Charles Oakley are, like, on a not even a name basis. Like, they never speak to each other.
Well, didn't shake hands at the All-Star game in New Orleans.
Yeah, they don't shake hands, like, none of that. I'm like, what is going on? How could you, if you're a free agent, why do you ever want to play in on the Knicks? And this shouldn't be that way, right? Like, you should want to play in New York. You know, you would want to play on the Giants, right? You would want to...
You want to play in the Yankees. Right? You want to play on the Red Sox. You want to play on these premier teams.
Right, you want to play on this... But why the hell would you ever want to play on the Knicks where, like, the GM is constantly slandering and defaming the best player on the team? The team hasn't even breathed success since that one year where Jason Kidd was the point guard, and before that it had been... You know, I think it'd been at least a decade since they were in the playoffs. And then,
in the NBA Finals, the lockout shortened season. That was like the last hurrah with
Charles Sprewell. Yeah, that was in the 70s.
No, that's the
90s. Oh, the 90s with Sprewell and John Starks. Right? Yeah. And
No, that's what it was.
And it's just...
But they got really hot with, like, Camby and went that magical run.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just like, why would I ever go to the Knicks, man? Like, I just don't see... It should be so easy... To go to the Knicks, you'd be like, yeah, man, it's in New York. They're going to pay me a ton of money because that's what they do for basically everybody. And
it's the Mecca.
Right? Yeah. And, like, you know, the party scene, Madison Square Garden history, all these advantages. And, like, the GM and the team owner are just, like, incompetent. Right? And it doesn't work.
I wish I could add something to that. That would be not me sounding like a hater. Because it's not that I'm a hater, I just think they're shit. Sum it up bluntly. Like, everything from organizationally top down is dysfunctional. And it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it's the team. You're right. It's just like a top down, right? The team, like the players. Okay, the players are fine. You know, you got Porzingis, he's good. Courtney Lee is good. Derrick Rose, meh. Right,
get out of town. Go get your max deal you claim you're gonna get. Get out of here.
Right, Carmelo is still there. Right, you got some action going off the bench. Willie Hernan Gomez.
You're super generous right now. Blow it up and rebuild around the zinger. That's what really needs to happen.
They would still keep Hernan Gomez on the team. Like, he would still be there.
They gotta really blow this thing up, dude.
Right. So there's, you know, there's talent there, not necessarily playoff talent or maybe, you know, conference finals talent or anything like that. But like, the GM has no idea. The only reason the only reason why Phil Jackson is even still there to this day is because he drafted Porzingis. And I was like, and it wasn't even like a skill, like, nobody is looking at this guy, so I'm gonna pick him up at four. And everybody's like, well, you know, everybody else is gone, like Jahlil Okafor is gone, and Embiid is gone, and I forgot who went second, and it's just like, okay, might as well just draft him, or D'Angelo is gone. No, not D'Angelo. Was it D'Angelo?
No, Julio Okafor, Embiid, and D'Angelo.
Yeah, right? Those guys are gone, so you might as well, like, draft a Porzingis. Like, it was just part of, like, the mock draft board.
I think you're missing the bigger point, though, with the Knicks, and that's the fact that James Dolan, quite frankly, doesn't care. And you look at how, like, if you're him, or if you're even a player on that team, and anybody in the organization, how the hell is James Dolan okay with everything that's going on and just keeps going on year to year saying, meh, you know, everything's good. Fans still come. I'm still making money. I still own the MSG network. Like, everything's good. If he's okay with this dysfunctional losing culture, how the hell can you go there and actually believe that things are going to change? That's like the biggest issue they face right now is that they don't care.
This is like a good time for James Dolan because James Dolan used to interfere in pretty much everything that the GM did, like Isaiah Thomas or anybody ever did. He always had his hand in it. And now he's touring with his band. It's like JD and the Straight Shots or something like that. So he's touring with his band, and he basically is just like left. You know, he's washed his hands of the team a little bit. So it's just Phil Jackson. But if you don't, you know, what's the phrase goes? Like, if the cat's away, the mice will play. Or something like that?
Yeah.
That's pretty much like that. Yeah, like, he's gone, he's not interfering, but, like, everybody else is like, oh, he's not interfering, okay, I'm just gonna, like, you know, twiddle our fingers and, like, maniacally laugh as we, like, ruin the team. I don't get it.
Right, well, what's even more sad about that, too, is, like, think about how low the bar is already. Just don't be worse than Isaiah. That's what the bar is. And
yeah,
and it's that's what, like, the bar is right now, man. That's how,
like,
sad this
and
is.
And, like, make sure, like, can we have a coach that is not, like, you know, visiting a player's ex-wife behind his back or something?
Right? Like, think about how low the lows are. We're just asking you to show up and don't do anything stupid. And they can't.
He's like, yo, just be like a regular person that just has regular hobbies and does regular stuff. That's it, man.
It's so bad.
Your average run-of-the-mill GM and just have a coach that he just coaches. You know, the GM, he just does GM things. He doesn't... Can you imagine if just, like, the GM was just, like, your average GM where he didn't really, like, talk to the... Like, he spoke to the players, but, like, it was just, like, a professional... this is a professional relationship, you know? And then, like, your coach, all he did was just coach things. You know how much better the team would be if they did that?
Leaps and bounds.
If you just had to average everything in the same players, the team would be significantly better. Yeah, amazing.
I, for one, find the Knicks incredibly fascinating, just not because of their product on the court, but because of their storylines off of it and what's kind of transpiring in the locker room and the dispute between Melo and Phil Jackson, obviously.
Why did he get a no trades clause? Has anybody even explained that? Nobody. I haven't read anything about that. Nobody has, like, said any definitive answer on why he got a no trade clause.
Well, the Knicks got James Dolan, more specifically, got suckered into believing that Melo is this transcending superstar that can bring the Knicks back to limelight. Him and Amari Stoudemire were the future, right? He gave them both over $100 million and said, you know, rebuild my franchise, please. Fail. And James Dolan seems to always be that sucker in the room, you know. Melo did it. Amari Stoudemire was productive in spurts until his knees gave out and they had to trade him. And
yeah,
and
oh, Phil Jackson.
Everything that went there. Phil Jackson, you know, he's always that sucker.
Joakim Noah.
Derrick Rose.
Derrick Rose. Oh, my God, yo. If he gets re-signed to that Knicks. That would be the most Knicks team or Knicks thing to do, right? Is, like, re-sign Derrick Rose to, like, a max contract.
That would be the most Knicks thing ever.
But see what we're talking about? Like, that's the most Knicks thing ever, is to, like, give a washed-up superstar a max contract deal because they're just known for making horrible decisions, man. Sigh. That is the Knicks thing to do.
As a Knicks fan, that's got to be just demoralizing.
Just let that sink in.
Because I went to a game at Madison Square Garden when they were horrific. It was one of their worst seasons, and I went to watch them play the Magic. And I sat next to somebody who was a season ticket holder in his family for 29 years. And he was telling me all these stories about how garbage the Knicks are and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Just went on and on and on and on and on and on and then on some more. And then told me a little bit about Spike Lee and went on some more. Mm-hmm. So I finally asked this guy, I go, well, why do you still come? He goes, because I got faith, man. I love my Knickerbockers. I got faith. Yeah, he's such a New Yorker. And I feel like it's the only reason why they all go.
Yeah, they have a great fan base, like actually a really amazing fan base, and it's just such a disservice, man. It's a massive disservice. Like right, even you know, even Troy Tribbiani and Chandler were Knicks fans. Right?
Like they're in the lexicon of our everyday culture.
Right, and they're amazing. They have amazing fans, and it's just, man, just get it together, man.
Can you ever, for a season, you know, tease us a bit.
You know, like everybody has that one friend where like everybody's doing their own thing, and then there's this one friend, he's just like goofing off, and he's just like, he's dating that one girl that you're like, well, you're still with her, and like he's just like, he's so like crappy job. You're like, bro, let's get this together, man. Everybody else is doing stuff.
Everybody's progressing.
Yeah, let's get this together. You know, like you don't want to leave them behind, right? So like, let's get this together. That's where the Knicks are right now.
Final question before we get out of here. Who's the better dynasty? Because obviously the Patriots won the Super Bowl. Again, much of chagrin to a lot of people, but you got to respect what they've done.
Hey, wait, hold on. Eli Manning, man. Both of those Super Bowl championships. Those are making Eli look real good right now, man.
Okay, let's take it a step further. They're two plays away. Well, two moments away from losing four straight Super Bowls. Yeah. Marshawn Lynch run, and then obviously the Falcons not collapsing. But we won't get too football here. Question is, better dynasty, Patriots or the Spurs? Same amount of titles in the same amount of years. They've both been – the Patriots have, I think, two more finals appearances than the Spurs do. But either way, you can see where the comparison is here. Mm-hmm. So better dynasty in your opinion.
I would pick the Spurs just because people love the Spurs and people despise the Pats.
And isn't that what makes the Pats better, though?
No, in fact, that makes it worse for me. It's like, that's like the difference between, you know, like the Kim dynasty and like the Kwan dynasty. Or no, not the Kwan dynasty. But you know what I'm talking about. Like, there's like the Golden Age.
Evil Empire,
like,
man.
You know, the Kim dynasty versus like.
Oh, I hate them. We can't beat them. Yeah. I love that part about them.
I don't know, man. So you think it's the Pats?
I think it's the Patriots just because, in my opinion, it's a bit harder. You got 53 guys on the roster, the physical nature of football, the grind of it, where it's just like everything's really condensed, and obviously the hard cap. Well, it used to be it's not even a hard cap. It's kind of like a soft cap, but the whole cap issue behind it makes it more difficult, too, because. The players are always changing, except number 12 and Bill Belichick. I just think that part, it makes it more difficult. Whereas the Spurs were able to keep together their main guys and interchange a few pieces here and there, but nothing major.
Yeah, and then, you know, like, the Spurs basically went from that super old, you know, Twin Towers play style to that beautiful game style where everybody was passing and pass and kick, and then you pass, layup. Right, and then
so the Patriots though. Patriots did something similar where they were very old school, traditional football, win on defense, and then Belichick decided to evolve with obviously what we all saw was a two tight end set, 21 personnel where they go two tight ends, one running back, Gronk, Aaron Hernandez before he decided to be the biggest gangbanger in the world, were out there just ripping guys apart, and then that transformed into Gronk, Martellus Bennett. Like we've seen what it's transformed into, and it just you can't stop it.
So, yo, is Gronk really that good?
Yeah.
Okay.
Physical freak, man.
Okay. I'm just saying because like you just told me like you know the coach and the quarterback basically made the tight end. So I'm like, is Gronk even that good?
Well, people always ask that about Tom Brady too, right? Is Tom Brady even that good? I mean, he's the GOAT now, obviously when you consider all things, but there's still the detractors out there, mostly because of what you're saying where people just hate them that you know, he's not that good. Put him on any other team but the Patriots and what is he?
You hear that? I mean, he's you know, if he was probably not on the Pats, he'd probably be like Peyton Manning. You
what's
know,
wrong Peyton Manning?
No, I'm just saying, like, he's just quarterback.
But
I was just saying, like, you know, he'd probably have a couple championships to his name, but I don't think he's like five. And then you know, he's just like rolling in the deep, married to Giselle. You know,
yeah, Tom Brady is literally like every guy's dream that wants to play football, and they hate him because they don't have it.
Yeah.
And he's just so cocky, like. It's not even cocky, it's confidence.
Yeah.
Look at the commercial he filmed, dude. Oh, do you have anything else to check in, Tom? Yeah, I got one more ring. And he puts it in and like, you filmed that before the Super Bowl. The goal.
They filmed those before. I remember when the Giants beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl 42? The one where they were about to go 19-0. There's two commercials filmed where it was like it was a perfect villa, and it was like that, what was it, the semi, I forgot which Miami team it was, but they lived there. It was the perfect team from Miami. They lived in Pleasantville or whatever, and it was just that team that lived there. And then there was one commercial where you'd see, like, the Patriots unpacking and be like, oh, there's a new family in town or whatever, and they'd be like, huh, and then you see them, like, sadly throwing the football back and forth. And then there's, like, another commercial where you see, like, Eli Manning delivering, like, a package to them, saying, and they're like, ah, oh, isn't it great in Pleasantville? It's just like, yeah, yeah, we're trying to keep it that way. And, you know, so, yeah, they film both commercials. It's probably a different commercial for when Tom Brady loses.
Well, they said, apparently, that he only filmed the one. That's a lot of trust in the production crew, right? Because imagine if they lost and that leaked out.
Oh, man, that'd be amazing. You'd get ridiculed for that. And, oh.
You're like salivating.
It's okay, man. Eli Manning is going to the Hall of Fame. It's all right.
Yeah. So, Spurs over Patriots for you?
Yeah, definitely. All right. And the Patriots Tang Dynasty. The Tang Dynasty versus the Kim Dynasty. Tang Dynasty is the golden age of Chinese, the Chinese Empire, bro. Or the civilization, at least.
Okay, I appreciate, you know, your love for history. I'm not even we weren't even a speck in the world. If Ryan was here, like, he would go off on you right now about all this, dude, because he loves you. He would go at you about Genghis Khan and everybody, just literally. We'll get drinks and we'll talk about that. Mm. On that note, though, we'll get out of here. We'll wrap this up. I'd like to thank everybody for listening to this Toronto Raptors edition of the Tip of the Tower podcast. As always, you can follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Tip of the Tower. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes and SoundCloud at Tip of the Tower. You can find me on Twitter at Crystal Kranitz. You can find DeMar Grant on Twitter at DeMar J. Grant. Guys, thanks for listening. The Raptors got a bit of a light schedule coming up, so enjoy the games here and there. But hey, Saturday night.
Yes.
The Raptors first to OKC.
Oh, I can't wait for that. See you later.
Must watch. All right, guys, enjoy the game. We'll see you on Twitter.
Later.